Now, let's take a broad view and ask everyone's opinion on this. Susie, let's begin with you, Susie English from Adam Brooks Hospital. What do you think actually the threat is in terms of a British or an Australian, a sort of Western healthcare system? Do you think we're well prepared?
Well, we've had warning. We've been able to observe the outbreak occurring in West Africa. And I think that early warning is very important for us to be able to mobilise people in our own health system, both in public health, in hospitals, in GP practices, to be aware of Ebola, to know what to look for, to know who's at risk of catching Ebola. And these are really important for preventing an outbreak in Britain or Australia.
Peter, do you think that we are at risk of this thing spreading much more? If it were to gain a toehold in a country like Britain, would it spread or would it just fizzle out?
It's not going to spread in Britain or Australia. As Susie said, we have very good public health systems. It's not really that transmissible. The flu, which Colin studies, is much, much more transmissible. It's relatively easy to contain if you know what to do and you have a public health service.
Colin, Peter's saying that many of these international organizations don't play well together. You're saying that in order for them to interact, if we're going to succeed and stop this and other kinds of outbreaks like this in future, they need to be playing well together. That doesn't sound like good news then.
For influenza, for example, WHO and Centers for Disease Control work very well together. But it's the lack of international coordination on a variety of different levels that ultimately creates problems. Coming up with the sort of ability to respond locally to outbreaks, which is what we really need, because international response is great, but if you're really going to catch it on the first day or the second day, you really need people on the ground in each country who are ready to respond at a moment's notice. And that's something that is not going to be necessarily developed by a big international organization, but it's something we have to develop within these countries themselves.
Peter, what about other sorts of disorders which might be lurking out there? Because Ebola's just one of many. What should we be doing to be more on our guard against those?
It's a resource allocation problem. Until they've killed a bunch of people, nobody's willing to spend any money. And what we really need to be doing is we need to be out there doing research and surveillance. But before the fact, nobody's willing to spend the money to do it. And so it's a huge problem.
Colin, you're nodding.
I think the current situation really highlights a broader international problem that we have, which is until there's a lot of people dying in some other place, and then there's a threat to us here in the UK or the United States or Australia, it's their problem. But we don't invest enough to develop that sort of very basic public health infrastructure to actually help them stop the problem before it becomes a potential problem for us.
So why has there been such a media storm?
Always, as humans, we're attracted to things that are spectacular and extreme. And in terms of horrific disease, Ebola is one of the worst that there is. And we're not concerned that much about the things that actually kill us, like influenza, for example. Approximately 500,000 people die of influenza every year. But we're so comfortable with what flu is and the fact that we've had it and didn't die from it that we don't worry about it that much.
Peter.
I think that I agree completely. Another contributing factor is zombie movies. People have gotten so used to these movies where, like, you know, you get one little splatter and then 30 seconds later it's a zombie and everybody's a zombie and everybody's going to die, that they have come to think that that's actual science rather than science fiction.
Don't come to the cinema with me. Not if you're going to wave your hands around like that. I mean, people will give us funny looks. But no, it's true though, isn't it? I mean, people do like a good story and they do like being professionally scared, really, don't they? And I mean, But it is important at the same time. I mean, someone was highlighting to us, isn't it interesting that lots and lots of people have died in Africa of this for 40 years, and it's when finally someone dies in America that people go, oh, maybe we should take some notice of this. Susie?
Absolutely. And I agree with everything that my fellow speakers have said about the need for infrastructure in countries that are least able to cope.
So following on from that then, we've got this question that's just popped up on social media. Does the media reaction actually affect how we respond? Colin, what do you think?
Well, indeed it does. And there's a couple of different components to it. So the short term is that a really strong media reaction can help facilitate the funding of a long-term international response, which is incredibly positive. However, one of the things that happens over time is that Ebola ceases to become news. So if we look at the number of headlines that reported the word Ebola over the past 3 months, they actually peaked in October, and they've been declining ever since then. Because at this point, everyone knows that there's a big outbreak going on in West Africa, and so it's not so much news anymore. We get fatigue from it. It's not dissimilar to the situation with influenza, H5N1 bird flu, back in 2006. It was the big scary thing that was going to kill us all, and there was a big threat. But it's not in the news anymore. but the threat itself hasn't changed. And so, unfortunately, we as humans, we get tired of hearing the same thing day after day, and so we have to hear new stories. And one of the things that really needs to be balanced in terms of what the media does and how it covers the Ebola outbreak is to stimulate long-term public interest. If
but
you trickle
said
it
that,
in...
Colin, yes. Today... This is Sunday, but today the Wellcome Trust have announced they're putting in £1.5 million to fund a number of little startup projects to try to come up with new sort of Ebola initiatives. You're nodding at that.
Well, the director of the Wellcome Trust, Jeremy Farrar, was if you can pick one person who was instrumental in actually creating a reaction to this outbreak, was he. He really shamed the international community into acting on this when everybody else was not doing anything. And he's a hero for that.
Susie, are you getting lots and lots of phone calls from Worried Well? That's another way that people are reacting.
We're not getting so many calls from the Worried Well, although I'm sure that GPs and hospital emergency departments undoubtedly will be seeing people who are very concerned about Ebola. The fear is real, whether or not there is a true threat. And that is something that health professionals have to deal with. Certainly, people who've been coming back from West Africa from treating people have encountered an awful lot of fear, and that fear is real. So we do have to be sensitive to what people think and the reaction that the media attention has generated. I'm hoping that this media attention will bring about changes, including vaccines and treatments, which will be a legacy that can be used to treat Ebola going into the future.
So what do you think should be done right now?
So I'm very happy that the treatments and the vaccine trials are progressing more quickly. I think this is long overdue. And furthermore, a concern from the current outbreak is that Ebola virus will become endemic in West Africa when it hadn't previously been there before. And so there may be more outbreaks going into the future, and we desperately need vaccines and treatments to combat these outbreaks.
And Colin, I guess on your wish list would be better international surveillance and cooperation, wouldn't it?
Indeed. I mean, it's something where going forwards from here, hopefully we'll be in a situation where we can end the current epidemic with no subsequent endemic circulation. But once this outbreak is over, that doesn't mean that the threat from Ebola is gone. It came from an environmental reservoir somewhere, and that threat will persist over time. We have to find good ways to monitor it, and we have to find better ways to respond next time.
Peter?
First of all, I think we should be monitoring bat populations, and I think this is much more predictable than people will admit. And I think that if in 2005, and colleagues and I published a paper saying it was predictable, and if you did X, went out and monitored bat populations, you could predict it. And had they done that, this might not have happened. And so I think that there has to be some money invested. What I was going to say is that the media has to be much more intelligent about advocating things that are actually solutions rather than just crying about how dangerous things are. And they must be much more sophisticated about understanding what's actually a good response and a constructive response and what's just inciting fear. And that's what has not happened enough to date.
I'll take that as a slap on the wrist and a wake-up call. That's Peter Walsh. And also with us on our panel this week, Susie English and Colin Russell. At the beginning of the program, you heard Andrew Coates and talking about vaccines earlier, Eleanor Malone.